Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Well, thank you all for coming. We're here to share with you our results for the year ended 30th of June, 2018. Bearing in mind that we know that some of you are not that familiar with the business, what we will do is we will give you a bit of an introduction to the company over and above what we've been giving to existing shareholders. So we'll start with that and then we'll move in, hopefully from there, you'll get it all and we'll move into the deck, okay? The standout thought for the year is the launch of the program that we have with Loblaw in Canada. And we'll talk about why that is such a significant milestone for the business. Moving on, ours is a SaaS business. What we do is we enable businesses to connect with their consumers with the purpose of issuing digital promotions and loyalty services. What we're aiming to do is to enable them to drive one more shopping trip or to sell one more product per visit. So those are the two areas that we operate in. In terms of the introduction to the business, it's a proven technology, as we'll show, particularly now with the scale of Loblaw. We've built a thing called the digital wallet this year. We'll talk about that. It's significantly upweighted our ability as a business. There are strong market drivers in our business, so I think we're operating with a tailwind, if there is such a thing in this world. We have an experienced management team. We are one of the things that you will like, you know, we're a SaaS business with strong recurring revenues and moving towards EBITDA neutrality and profitability. We've got sufficient funding to do what we need to do, including a debt facility, and we'll talk about that. And you can see tiny little logos there, but we have a large and growing customer base of big household names. Looking at the board, our chairman is Malcolm Wall, who has spent a career in media, ITV, more latterly Virgin. One of the founding investors at the IPO in the business was Terry Leahy, who was my CEO when I was at Tesco. I was the CMO. We did Clubcard together 22 years ago now. And, you know, one of the reason I'm here is because Eagle Eye enables digital Clubcard. So that is sort of why I am justified in having some sort of a view on this. Steve Rothwell, still in the business. The founder of the company is the CTO. Lucy, you'll get to know. Al Henderson is our new head of sales, is a recent internal promotion. And David Aylmer runs the operations. So what I'm going to do here, if you can spin around, I'm actually going to show you. This is what we built for Loblaw. So there's a consumer, and they want to join the PC Optimum program. Now, they will come in through a phone, through a website, via their Loblaw credit card, or through the loyalty scheme, or potentially any other way. And although they may come in one way, even if they come in via the phone, they're probably an e-commerce customer. So the first thing that you have to understand in the sort of modern, digitally connected loyalty world is that one individual has many personas. And the thing that you want to do is you want to attach all those personas back to the one individual. Because otherwise, to give you the example, you go onto a website, you look at something, you go into the store next day and you buy it, and the website persecutes you for the next 3 months saying, why haven't you bought an X? And the answer is because there's a gap in the data. What we aim to do is to close that gap. In terms of location, nearly every large tier one business is more than a single activity. They'll have a financial services arm, a mobile phone arm, a coffee shop arm. In this case, you've got Loblaw, you've got Shoppers Drug Mart. For Loblaw, read Tesco. For Shoppers Drug Mart, read Boots. Those two businesses, Loblaw acquired Shoppers Drug Mart a couple of years ago in Canada. They have a financial services arm and they now have a deal with Esso. So you can now get Loblaw points when you buy your fuel, or your gas in this case, from Esso, 2,000 sites in Canada. One of the reasons why this matters is because these businesses, as you would well know without necessarily being experts, have different margin structures. Because they have different margin structures, they have different loyalty programs. The richer your margin, the richer your loyalty program. So by and large, health and beauty drugstore businesses have richer loyalty programs than grocers because they've got higher margins. So what you need then to be able to do is you need to be able to reflect all of these channels in the different rewards that you give. You may want to give points, you may want to give cash. You know, people will collect coffee stamps till they get another cup of coffee. They will not present a percent discount card in a coffee shop. It just doesn't work. So you know, what you can do is you can design an offer appropriate to the channel and appropriate to the persona. That all goes into the customer relationship management system, which is not Eagle Eye. Now, that in this case, with this client, it's FICO. But it's Dunnhumby, you might have heard of. It's one of these big data analytics, big data businesses. They whirl it all around, increasingly using AI to analyze it, and decide that the next best message or the next best offer for this customer to be sent by the AIR platform is that. And it goes to the phone. They then click on it on their phone, and then next bit of new technology is they then have basically a wallet. So all those offers can go in there, all the points that they've earned can go in there, you know, and anything else to do with their relationship with Loblaw can be contained in this wallet. And that is all new and has been built this year. And we'll explain as we go through why that is significant to Eagle Eye and the future of Eagle Eye. First proof point, we were in the 307 billion coupon business until we built this. We are now also in the 90 billion, now in the 90 billion loyalty business. So what we've built is the capability to earn and burn points. Previously, we were not in that market. So that's a whole new area that we can now sell in. We have always been in the gift market. We supply almost any sector that is trying to bridge online to offline. Currently don't do QSR and food service, but we might come to that. And the geographies that we're in, UK, working in Europe, obviously in Canada, and we'll come back to Australia. Lucy's going to explain to you how we make money.
Great, thank you, Tim. So the first thing to note is there will be an implementation or a configuration fee to join the platform. We do that on a T&M basis, and that will range in terms of time it takes to deliver, depending on whether you're doing a small F&B client or you're doing a whole platform rehaul. So if we're talking about small implementation, we're talking about months. Doing a Loblaws type scheme, we're talking about years. The next point is around when you move into the runtime part of the contract and you move into that sticky recurring element of the business model. We charge a license fee to access the AIR platform, which also covers hosting, support, etc. And then we have a transaction fee, so a per-click model. Now, the thing you've got to understand about the transaction element is our business broadly sits in three components. One, as Tim highlighted, will be the couponing world, then it's the gift, and then it's the loyalty piece. When we're talking about any of those, there's an intrinsic link between the value of the promotion or reward you can give and actually what we can charge. So if you're talking about coupons, let's take an example being 50p off a six-pack of Coke. You can charge somewhere between a penny and 5p on average for that type of transaction. When you move into the gift world, well, actually, the value of gift that you're moving into can be somewhere between £20, £50, you know, somewhere around that value. Well, we can actually charge more for that transaction, so somewhere between 10 and 20 pence, for example. Then when you move into the loyalty services world, where actually you're talking about earning and burning of points, you've got to get a lot more points earned and burnt to get the same value to the consumer and to the retailer as that comparison with the coupons. So you're talking about parts of pence when we're talking about the loyalty world. So that's how you've got to understand it. And we'll talk more about that as we see the volumes and how they've changed this year with the implementation of new loyalty services.
What sort of contract period are people signing up to?
So our average contract length is just over 3 years, but for the bigger grocery clients, they're more like a five-year contract.
So I've talked about the market size, then just thinking about the market opportunity. I think that the huge opportunity is the digital connection. You know, if you think about it, bricks and mortar retailers are woefully behind in terms of the digital connectivity they have with you as a consumer, whether it's restaurants you visit or shops that you go to. The reason why that matters is because once you've got that digital connection, A, it's free, so you can do your marketing for free. B, it's personalised. If you're a vegetarian, I don't have to send you, you don't have to watch ads on meat. And C, it's now. So I can send you, I know you've walked into the restaurant because I've picked you up on the Wi-Fi, I've picked your phone up on the Wi-Fi. I can send you an offer to your phone now for a dessert. And if I'm really good at my big data stuff and I look in the data lake, I see you never buy a dessert. So I'm really knowing I'm stretching your spend there. On the other hand, you may come in every night of the week and I may just give you a bottle of wine with a coupon and say, thanks for coming, here's a bottle of wine. You know, so there's a load of marketing options that you get to. But the important point to think about is marketing in the now. That is going to be, that is the big new opportunity. And the why it matters is the same reason that near me searching mattered for Google. You know, if you know that near me searching transformed the rate of growth in Google search. And of course, the reason why it was near me was an enormous proxy for relevance. And so there was a whole new relevant way of searching. Well, my argument is now is a similar proxy for relevance, and therefore people will come into it. The second thing is that, you know, one of the things that people say is, yeah, this is all very well. It sounds great in theory, but who's doing it? And well, the answer to who's doing it is Loblaw are doing it, and this is what they're doing. And by the way, Sainsbury are doing it. And then the final thing is this way of bringing the data together, all this, all these personas, all these formats coming back to one person are exactly the foundations that you need to then start applying AI to that data to start working out in a much more sophisticated way what is the next best offer for that specific customer. So I would say the market opportunity is large and growing and becoming more relevant all the time. Just going to our core strategy. Our core strategy we describe as being to win new clients, to get them to transact on the platform, and then to get them to deepen. It's like crossing the Rubicon. The winning is not easy, I've got to be honest. But when you get when you do win, somebody says, yeah, I am going to connect eagle eye to my tills. I'm going to make the connection. Once they've made the connection, they then are on a journey of developing, and digital becomes part of their marketing toolkit and their problem-solving toolkit. Transactions went through the roof in the year, 556%, driven by Loblaw, but also Sainsbury and some other good stuff Lucy will talk about later. And then the third element of the strategy deepens. So they're now on the platform. They're doing good stuff. They've got transactions going. What else can we sell them? And you can see there, you know, in the food and beverage sector, we grew that existing customers by 28%. We grew the tier one grocers existing customers by 38%. Once people are on the platform, they buy more services from us. They use it more. It's also worth noting that in the year, Pizza Express, Mitchells and Butlers, Greggs and Marks and Spencers all renewed their contracts. And Lucy will come back later on, when she talks about the numbers, to talk about the very low levels of churn we have as a business. We spent a lot of money in the year. There's no hiding that. So what did we spend it on? We spent it on the digital wallet. I've sort of alluded to that, and I'll come back to that in a minute. We spent it on staff rewards. One of the, you know, the ways of getting digital adoption up is to get the staff on it. When the staff know that the app is good and it's giving them value, they sell it to the customers. And secondly, unfortunately, sad but true, there is quite a lot of fraud in staff discount schemes. What we do is we issue unique single-use coupons. You know, that's why we're interesting, because we can give you £5 off anything, but you can only use it once. Once it's been scanned, it's gone. So if you want to give your staff a discount, they can't give it to everybody on their street. They can use it, and then once it's gone, it's gone. We have done some work on Gift. We've already, you know, we already are a digital portal on Gift, But what we've done is we've partnered with a plastic card provider so we can provide end-to-end one service, get your gift product here. Huge thing in the year was the scale and speed of the platform. You know, we moved in the year from 60 transactions a second to 3,000 transactions a second. And Lucy will come on and talk in a minute about some other mind-bogglingly large figures that the platform is now capable of doing. But, you know, there was a big, it was a big year of beefing up the platform. We did stuff on GDPR and compliance, all good, but not very interesting, but necessary to stay in business. I think the one thing that I would point to is in terms of, you know, one piece of innovation without giving all next year's thunder away now, is we are in the process of developing subscription services. Now, the reason that that matters is because of Amazon Prime. You know, Amazon Prime have really supercharged their business by the Prime subscription. So every retailer in the world is saying, what is our version of Amazon Prime? What should, you know, what should we do? What could we do? What we're building is that we can hold subscription type elements. You know, you can have three of these at a discount. We can measure that that you've consumed two. We can tell you you've still got one left. When you've used the third one, you can't get any more. You know, you've got a 10% discount up until you spend $1,000. Whatever it is, we are able to build those elements into the wallet. So however you structure your subscription, we can deliver that to consumers for you. Moving on, I said I'd come back to the wallet. I've talked quite a lot about this. It is a step change in our offer. I mean, the first thing is it clearly takes us into the loyalty market. But again, back to the competitive standing of these very large businesses, you know, one of the things that they do not like is the thought that a lot of the stuff that they do for their customers will end up in an Apple or a Google wallet. That feels like disintermediation. They don't want to lose their data. You know, they know people like Loblaw, Tesco, Sainsbury, and on, know how valuable their data is. They don't want it leaching out of the business. So the fact that they've now got a wallet which can sit behind an app tile and can be a receptacle, you know, a modern, vibrant receptacle for all this stuff is an important part of being able to compete in the digital world.
This has been a year of investment for us. We've invested in the platform, the product, and the processes. Tim's talked a lot about the digital wallet. We've invested probably about £4 million into the product itself this year, about half of which we capitalise onto the balance sheet. In June 2017, we went to market to raise money. One of the things that we had cited at that point was around the need for us to invest in the operational capability into Canada to serve Loblaws as a client. So now we have two significant data centres running out of North America, and we have an operational team in Canada to service our Canadian client. The important thing to talk about there as well is about we will utilise that infrastructure and those people to leverage that in terms of as we grow, both in Canada and the North American market. We probably put an incremental £1 million into the operational capability as a result of that this year. We started to dip our toe into new markets. As a result of Loblaws, we've got two guys on the ground in Canada who are starting to explore both Canada but also the North American market where we see good opportunity. And as well, we've started to look at Australia. Early days, we've got one guy on the ground there. He's been working there for 6 months now. But we see a really good opportunity and a real need for Australian retailers, sort of a timing point, really. So early days, but if you take the people, bit of travel, bit of marketing, we probably put £500,000 into that part of the business this year. The last point is around subject matter expertise. We've now got a bigger, more experienced team. We've invested into subject matter experts in loyalty as a result of these new loyalty services, into couponing, where there's a real opportunity with CPG brands. Product marketing, HR communications, when we're getting our message out both into the UK and internationally as well. So we're a much bigger, much deeper, more experienced team now. So if you take that compelling capability, plus now the proven scale that we've demonstrated as a result of Loblaws, we believe we're in a great position to tackle the UK market further, where we still think there's loads of potential, but also internationally, where we're starting to make good progress. I wanted just to take a moment just to sort of reflect a little bit more on who Loblaws are. Some of you might not have heard of them. They are the retail giant of Canada. They have over $46 billion in sales. They have a 40% market share. They have about 13 banners within the Loblaws family. The main Loblaws logo represents grocery in Canada. And in 2013, they acquired a company called Shoppers Drug Mart, which is Tim talked about before. They're like an equivalent of Boots in Canada. So they were the real health and beauty pharma giant. In 2013, they were faced with this real challenge because both Loblaws and Shoppers Drug Mart had their own individual really well-loved loyalty programs. One had 8 million customers, the other had 11 million customers. But one worked in a promotions-based way and another worked in a points-based way as a result of the margin structures of businesses Tim had talked about earlier. So with consultation with the customer, what they got to as a decision is they wanted to have one program, but to be able to retain the complexity of how they operated from going from shop to shop. And that's when they found us to be able to do that. So the digital wallet, in terms of how Tim's described it, is really the key to why we won that deal. To be able to have one single customer ID linked to different ways of working as you go around the different Loblaw family logos. So we had a successful launch in February this year. We're now 6 months down the line from that. We've got more than 14 million customers on the program, and we're doing over 150 million offer permutations per week. Now, that is vast in terms of any number of offers being swirled around to deliver to each Canadian consumer on this program real personalized offers for you on a weekly basis. Whereas traditional loyalty, as you probably know it now in the UK, is very much segmented into traditional buckets. So if you have a similar type of profile in terms of age, your high level likes, maybe you have a pet, then you will get very similar offers. What this is doing is switching loyalty on its head and really rewarding you as a consumer for what you really, really like. The news on Loblaws post-year end for us was the launch of Esso to the programme. Now, why does that matter? Well, actually, if you take grocery, you take pharma, you take health and beauty, and you now add fuel to your own weekly shopping habits, that's an awful lot of your weekly spend. So adding real, real value to the Canadian consumer and doing it in really quick succession from launch in February to going live in August. So behind the scenes, we've been able to plug into over 2,000 Esso stations to enable real-time issuance of points for spending in fuel. So that takes the total number of stores that a Canadian consumer can earn points to over 4,500. So huge, vast scales. And I think it puts us in a very different position when we're having conversations with potential retailers on what we can do and how quickly we can deliver it. The next section is around the financial update. So these are a snapshot of some of the real highlights. We've grown the business by 33% from the prior year, going from 11 million to 14.8 million. We've done that by delivering on our customer strategy, as Tim highlighted earlier on. To also understand underneath the bonnet, our business probably separates into two parts. The air business that we've talked about here today, but also we've got a small proportion of SMS business. That's worth about 10% of that overall revenue to us. The SMS business has grown by 4%. The air business, which is now the big chunky strategic bit, has grown by over 39%. We're a SaaS business. Recurring revenue is a really important KPI for us. We've grown that from 68% to 77%. That really reflects some of these big tier one contracts moving from the configuration part of their contract into the sticky recurring license and transaction part.
As an example, given that Loblaws is recent, what percentage of their expected total transaction volumes have you got already?
On a monthly basis, we've got what we're going to get until we develop. But of course, that then went up when they launched Esso, and it will go up as new products and services get added to the platform, but on a monthly basis, we get what we're going to get. We just have only had 6 months so far.
Well, so you're not, some they're not phasing it in gradually. They've just chucked
it. They threw the switch one night, and we all held our breath, and we technologically it was an amazing achievement. Mm.
So the next KPI is around churn. This is the first year we started to measure churn, actually. So it was 2.6% gross churn last year. This year it was 1.7%. If you marry up that with the renewals that we've had to do in the F&B space this year, actually it shows the relevance of the product the second time round.
What's your customer concentration?
We probably have our biggest clients make up about 50% of our revenue. So like handful of clients.
3 to 5.
Yes.
And just to be clear, you did say that's the annual churn rate, not the monthly.
Correct, the annual churn rate, yes. The next point here is around cash. So at year end, we had 0.4 million in cash. And in addition, we had a 5 million Barclays facility that we weren't utilising as well. I'll talk later around the cash burn and what we used it for. So this next slide shows the half-on-half revenue analysis. And I think if you look at it, 2017 to 2018, or you split 2018 into the two halves, the story is the same. We've had increased revenue coming from the subscriptions and transactional elements of the business. And we've had increased momentum in the second half of the year. And also to highlight, in the second half of the year, we made good traction in the brand and issuance space. A good example of that was Google using our platform to run a Visa Tap and Go campaign, where you bought anything with Visa Tap and Go and you entered into a prize draw and you could win a coupon for one of our restaurants or retailers that we worked to. So I think there was about 10 restaurants that were within that campaign. So really showing the power of the network, where a third party can use the platform to utilize and close the loop on marketing in that way. The next slide is around volumes. I alluded to this earlier on. There's been massive increase in volumes this year. So going from 60 million last year to over 400 this year, giving us over 500% increase in those volumes, really showing the power of the platform.
So that suggests revenues per transaction are much lower.
Exactly. So when I described earlier on what the new services and the price that a transaction can carry, well, new services this year relate to loyalty. So actually, you've had a massive hike up in volumes in relation to loyalty, because you can see that second half of the year here, of which they carry a much lower price per transaction going through the platform. Going forward, what's going to happen with these volumes? Well, for sure, we're going to get an increase in 2019 on volumes impacted by the annualisation of Loblaw. We've only got 5 months of Loblaw in here. But also, we're expecting the impact of the wins from this year, but also more impact from the brand transactions as well to come in through in 2019. The next slide is the income statement. I've talked about the top line. We carried this year an 87% gross profit margin. We maintained that from the prior year. Interestingly, if you go down the P&L, this next point around operating costs really points to that investment slide that I talked to you earlier on. It's been a year of investment. So our operating costs have gone from 11.5 million to 14.8. So that incremental 3.3 million has come from people, IT, and sales and marketing. The majority of our cost base is people, so 60% of that 14.8 represents people costs, 20% IT, and then 10% relates to sales and marketing, which is the next significant chunk.
You expect to continue having to invest more and more to develop different things for new clients and so on?
As I said earlier on, we spent £4 million on the product. The reason the big clients buy off us is not only for the product today, but also for the future. That really is why they went with us rather than a traditional big tech company. So yes, for sure, next year we will continue to invest in the product, because it's important in terms of the stickiness of the contracts, particularly when we come up for renewal of those big ones. EBITDA loss was 2 million, slightly ahead of where the city had us. But interestingly, if you break that EBITDA loss into the two halves of the year, it was 1.4 million loss in the first half and 0.6 in the second. At the half year, we talked about we've done our investment this year, we've put the investment in, and what we're going to expect to see in the second half is that to go up slightly, but the revenue to really ramp up and that flow down to the EBITDA line. That's exactly what's happened. And we'll see a similar story in cash. So the next slide is the cash bridge. We've spent 1.3 million of cash on the operating cash outflow, EBITDA loss of the 2 million, netting against working capital inflow of 0.3, plus an R&D tax claim of 0.4 that came in January. In addition to that, we've got the capex of 2 million. The majority of that relates to people developing the product. So 1.9 of that relates to that, giving us net cash of 0.4. But then again, if you split the cash burn of 3.3 million to the first half and the second half of the year, the first half was 2.9 and the second half was 0.4. The second half did have the benefit of the R&D tax claim, so it is slightly skewed. But you can see both in terms of EBITDA and also cash, we're heading nicely towards that prediction of us becoming EBITDA neutral and also cash generative.
When do you expect that to happen?
So next year, Investec have got us as 18.5 on the top line and EBITDA neutral next year.
Year as a whole.
Yes, exactly. Up to June 2019.
And what level of capexing are they looking at you doing
similar.
Next year?
Exactly the same, actually.
So I think, you know, just to summarise, this is a business that's growing at sort of plus 30%. And actually, in the year, if you look at the SaaS element of it, virtually 40%. Sort of 90% margins, 77% recurring revenue, tiny rates of churn, moving to EBITDA positive, got enough cash. We think that the market is growing and that we think that personalization is the way forward and we are the engine that enables personalization. The reason why personalization matters is in terms of marketing effectiveness. You get more change in behavior for every pound of you spent, the pound that you spend. The business is certainly in stronger shape. We've got better people. The product is undoubtedly better than it was. And I think that we are positioned to grow. And we've set the business the challenge of being what we call better, simpler, cheaper. This is, you know, it would be a slightly unusual thing to do, I think, in a business at this stage in its development to bring in a cost-cutting program. You know, that's not what you do. But having said that, businesses like this that have grown very fast, that have by and large had the cash that they wanted, are not necessarily very efficient and don't actually go back over the processes and the ways they do their work to, you know, in a way that a more mature organization, which was trying to get a bit higher performance out of itself, would do. So what we're saying is, now come on, there are better ways of doing this, and the two benefits of that, they'll be simpler to do. That'll mean that we can access growth more easily, but also we can benefit profitability and we can produce more for less. So that's a program that we've got going in the business. It's not in any of our numbers, but I believe that it will be beneficial in the year ahead, and hopefully we'll be able to update a little bit on that at the half year and then at the full year. In terms of the outlook, the pipe is looking quite good, so we're quite comfortable that the momentum, sales momentum, is good. The volumes, clearly the annualisation of Loblaw, the volume growth this year is going to be huge, and I'm very comfortable that we will continue to deepen once we've won these clients and got them across this digital Rubicon. You know, the one example that I would point to, Green King, we won them in the year and then actually sold them another service before we got to the anniversary of their contract. So it moves pretty fast. So as I say, I think we think the outlook is good and the board is confident for the year ahead. That's it from us for the formal presentation. We'd be delighted to take any questions.
Can you talk a bit about who you're competing against for these contracts you're after?
We are competing against retailers who think they can do it themselves, which by and large is a mistake. It doesn't mean they don't do it themselves, but by and large is a mistake because you're only ever going to build it once and, you know, you'll be our 10th, 20th, 50th installation.
Yeah.
And then sometimes till manufacturers say, oh, yeah, we can do that. That's part of our services. And then there are some businesses in the States, but those businesses in the States are mainly about getting branded coupons to consumers to be redeemed in shops. So they actually really work for the branded manufacturers rather than for the retailers. It isn't yet a hugely competitive market, but there are other people. We don't win everything we pitch for, let's put it that way.
Or if I ask another way, for the ones that you don't lose, are you consistently losing to the same...
No.
Organisation.
No, there is nobody, no, absolutely not. There is nobody who we come up against who we, no, it's you lose for different reasons. Not this year, new CEO, change of plan, we think we can do it ourselves, or somebody else. You know, there's a host of reasons you lose, but it's not, there is not one common feature across the country, let alone across the globe.
Retail is clearly a challenging sector at the moment. You read about it in the press all the time. I'm just interested in your sort of sales cycle and the length of time and whether you're really being sort of held up hugely because of Brexit concerns, the retail situation on the high street.
Any form of... uncertainty doesn't help. I think our last sale, start to finish, was 4 weeks. It varies a lot. I mean, we are wrestling one to the ground at the moment where the sales cycle is unbelievably long.
But that's quite interesting. I wouldn't have thought 4 weeks.
No, I mean, it's interesting. So if you get into the decision maker and they go, yeah, we're going to have this, let's go, then now. But as I say, I think, as you say quite rightly, it's an industry that's under stress. You've got the hard discounters at one end, you've got Amazon on pure plays at the other end. So the available market is shrinking. Cost cutting and productivity is the order of the day. And we're coming along and we're saying, look, actually, we can help you trade through this. In these situations, there will be winners and losers. There always are. There always have been. And our argument is you need to be digitally abled and digitally connected to be one of the winners. I mean, I'll go back to the example I made at the beginning of the omnichannel story. You know, being followed around trying to sell you something that you've already bought is doing nobody any good. Those gaps in data can be relatively easily bridged. And businesses will work out that they need to. And, you know, I mean, that's what we do for Sainsbury. We enable a promotion that is issued in the stores to be redeemed online or vice versa. As far as I'm aware, you still can't do that in Boots, for example. So these are not small businesses that you've never heard of that have got these problems. These are businesses that in the 1990s, early 2000s, built an e-commerce platform and it doesn't properly connect to the rest of the business. So you've got these two, you know, operating models doing this. Somehow you've got to link them together, and we're one of the ways you can link them together.
How big's your sales team? How many employees total and how many sales?
We have 140 employees and we have 20 salespeople, 20 people involved in the pre-sales and sales process.
Is that enough?
It's a very good question.
Am I right in guessing you also get involved yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. And we all do, actually. Lucy manages Loblaw, which is why she talks about it. Steve, our founder, is very involved in Loblaw because he's like the tech genius. Lucy's very involved in Sainsbury. You're right. You know, one of the things I do is go around the world and try and use the slightly aging but not old Rolodex to open doors, and so it's a chicken and egg thing, I think. The way I would prefer to do it is to have busy salespeople who are making a lot of money And it is becoming apparent that actually they can't service the prospects that well and then bring more in, rather than a lot of salespeople slightly loafing around, not making any commission. Pragmatically, what we're trying to do is add as we go and add as we develop, particularly with, you know, at the stage we are in cash and EBITDA.
And with CapEx, is that going to continue at that pace? Is that the nature of the business that you're in? Or is this just early phase and it then gets less as time goes on?
I think, Lucy's more expert than me in this, I think it's the nature of the business that we're in, you know, that in a minute our revenues will be 20, 30, 40 and we'll be spending 5 or 6, you know, which is actually quite manageable when you're up doing 20, 30, 40, but has been rather a lot when we were taking 6, you know. So I think, I mean, the important point that I make to people is, as I said, this is not a complete change in strategy. This is still a business investing an awful lot in growth. But actually, it's got to a scale now where it can invest an awful lot in growth within its cash resources and actually sort of move to EBITDA break even or not, but still be investing.
If someone decided they wanted to do something similar, but they didn't want to contract with you, how difficult and how long would it take and how difficult would it be for them to do something similar to this off their own bat?
Somewhere between difficult and impossible, I would say. We lost a piece of business 3 years ago and it's back. We didn't win the contract. Yeah. Because they were offered by somebody else they couldn't do. One of the largest retailers in the world was trying to build something like this 3 or 4 years ago. I don't know whether they changed their mind, moved the resources somewhere else, but still hasn't hit the market.
Do you work at all with anyone other than retailers? Or is retail your only avenue?
We have a 65% share of the casual dining market in the UK. So a lot with restaurants. And one of the attractive things that's happening in the business, that people like Heineken, Diageo, Pernod Ricard are using our platform to say, go into All Bar One and have a beer, or go into Harvester and have a Campo Viejo, or whatever it is. So that what you're starting to see is that thing that we were talking about earlier, about brands promoting to redeem through the network. So that's good.
So is the brand your client?
In that case, they sometimes are, sometimes they're the retailer's client, or the restaurateur's client. Quite often in those cases, they are our client, that we are drumming up activity. And, you know, and if you think about it, if you were a bar owner, this is pretty cool because people are coming in, somebody's paying to get people to come into my bar. You know, why wouldn't I be interested in that? So that's an example. We are talking to food service businesses, you know, whether it's a university, a stadium, or an office block that's got 6,500 employees. You can see the logic of trying to have a digital connection with these people. Come and get a beer at half time. You know, would you like a sandwich delivered to your desk? All of that stuff. So that's an area that we're exploring. And we're also exploring quick service restaurants as well. So basically, anywhere where you have an online to offline experience is where we can play. Because without us, you go online to black hole.
Your revenue forecasts, how many new sales do those expect? As in, are they cautious and you've got pretty much got them just on expanding what you're doing already, or do you need to keep selling in order to do this?
Yeah, for sure, we can't say how many. I mean, that would depend on, you know, small or large, but we definitely need to win this year. I think we've probably got more irons in the fire now. And again, you know, what we've proven is that we can deepen and we can deepen very well. And actually adding loyalty services this year is new, and you can go and sell those services to existing customers as well. So, but for sure, we've got to win.
I mean, I think Lucy's exactly right. You know, clearly we have to have a forecast out there which reflects the sort of business we want to be, but ideally isn't a hostage to fortune. In a year, we will win more. We just don't know which year. You know, so that's one potential piece of upside. I think the other thing is, the thing that's always been behind this business, actually what you do is you create a platform where branded manufacturers put offers which then are redeemed in a store. So if you think about that from the point of view of the store, they say, I've got 10 slots. It's sort of like, it's a media business. I've got 10 slots to sell this week, and they sell those 10 slots for a price. They get 10 promotions on there, which drive consumers into the store to redeem those promotions, and they then sell the brands that do the promotions the data back from the promotion. That has the potential to be a very big business, but nobody's doing it yet. And so clearly, that's another potential kicker in the revenue line for Eagle Eye. What we have to do is we have to persuade somebody that that's the way they want to go to market. And we keep chipping away, and one day somebody will probably go, yeah, that's a good idea. And then, of course, that will cause a competitive ripple that says they've got one of those, why haven't we got one?
You haven't got Tesco's.
We have got Tesco's. When they want to go outside the four walls of Tesco's, like you switch your loyalty points for a voucher in, say, Pizza Express or one of the many other F&B clients, that's what we do. Because they couldn't create and they wouldn't want those connections happening.
But so would you have a problem anyway, because you're so big with Sainsbury's? Could you go with another?
No. So that's the big point around the brain and the analytics piece. We're not the point of difference, we're the postman piece. So we're like the MasterCard and Visa of the promotions world. I think that's the best way to think about it. So we do have Asda, we do have Tesco's, we do have Sainsbury's. If we were the point of difference, it's a bit like Dunnhumby and Tesco's. They sort of had one big client in significant geographies, whereas we're able to work with many, and hence the logos.
Any comments about the share price? I'm just looking back at the 52-week high.
We have very long-standing, very loyal holders. Where there is a tiny bit of institutional selling, but by and large, very long-standing, very loyal holders. Our shares move on tiny retail volumes. At least as much a bit is probably to do with spread betting as it is to do with fundamentals. We have got to just work away, make sure the story's out there so the price starts to move. As the price starts to move, there will be more sellers. Some people will want to get out at various prices. There's plenty of people who want the shares, you know, and get them. And then I think we'll be on a good path.
Tremendous.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Thanks for coming.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.